All right, 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call the June 18th, 2021 joint informational hearing of the Taxes Committee and Property Tax Division on the 2021 First Special Session House File 9. It is an informational meeting. I'm calling this meeting under Rules 10.01 for remote meetings. And with that, Ms. Griska, I'm going to ask you to call the roll.
Marquardt. Marquardt. Marquardt.
Ms. Griska, I can't hear you.
Okie dokie.
We can hear as members.
I'm not.
Is Marquardt?
Hearing Ms. Griska?
I can hear you, yes.
But the guy who put him on here, that's Marquardt.
Something on my end.
They're both the same.
Marquardt?
I'm not hearing folks. But so Marquardt present. Ms. Griska, I'm going to have you call a roll, and I'm going to log in again here because I cannot hear you.
Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Liz Lagarde present. David.
David's present.
David's present. Igbaje.
Present.
Igbaje present. Anderson. Anderson Paul. Becker Finn excused. Carlson.
Carlson present.
Carlson present. Detmer. Detmer. Fisher.
Fisher present.
Fisher present. Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Garofalo present. Gomez.
Gomez present.
Gomez present. Green. Green. Hassan. Hassan. Her.
Her present.
Her present. Hertas.
Hertas.
Hertas present. Howard.
Howard present.
Howard present. McDonald.
McDonald present.
McDonald present. Miller. Miller. Moran. Moran. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen present. Pulowski.
Pulowski present.
Pulowski present. Robbins.
Robbins present.
Robbins present. Sandell.
Sandell present.
Sandell present. Schultz. Schultz. Stevenson. Stevenson. Swazinski.
Swazinski present.
Swazinski present. Torkelson excused. Joachim.
Joachim present.
Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We have a quorum. Thanks, Ms. Griska. And I can hear everyone now, so thanks for your patience on that. Members of the public, to get information or the materials that are at this meeting, this informational meeting, go to the House of Representatives on the website, go to committees, go to taxes, and you have all of your handouts and members. You should have a number of handouts, the local government aid supplemental aid, the homeless prevention aid allocations, the summary of the bill, the final tracking sheet, the omnibus tax bill language, and also there are a number of letters that people are sending in letters instead of public testimony. So they certainly have the option to do that. Also, Representative Miller is now here. And so all of those materials are listed for you. Before we move on, just a few thanks. First of all, I want to thank Governor Walz and Speaker Hortman and Majority Leader Gazelka for their leadership and for this target, because they recognize the importance of dealing with the COVID-19 recovery and also addressing and helping all businesses and individuals hit by COVID-19. Also want to thank Commissioner Doty and the Department of Revenue, who have been a constant source of input and help and a lot of work along the way. Also, House research staff, fiscal staff, the revisor's office, partisan staff, thank you so much for all the great work in putting this bill together and all the extra hours of work you put into this. Also thanking Senator Nelson and the Senate side. It was very cordial, very productive in working with Senator Nelson and her team. I'd like to thank the conferees on the House side, Representative Davids, Representative Joachim, Representative Herr, Representative Leslie Gard, for your work throughout the process. And finally, the work of the Taxes Committee and Chair Joachim, the Property Tax Division, for the excellent work throughout the year and being a big part of what's in this bill that we have before us today. And the general public and all the officials and folks who participated in testimony, provided letters or public testimony, whatever that was, really helped to make a difference in putting this bill together. So members, it is an informational hearing. You know, back in 2019, we kind of had the same type of situation. And quite frankly, before 2019, I don't ever recall really an informational meeting during a special session once a bill was put together. But I thought what we did in 2019 was good. Come back to the Tax Committee, Property Tax Division, and you know, go over what the bill looks like. And the reason to do this is just to put more eyes on the bill, quite frankly, to make sure that this bill does what we intend it to do. And we're already getting some comments, and there will be, for Ways and Means and or the House floor, an author's amendment that will address, you know, some of the technical things and small changes that have been brought up. So that's the reason we do this, so we can really get this bill right. So what has the process been? The conference committee met, of course, until the end of session, but we did at that time actually work through and adopt six of the articles. Now, of course, that dropped off, but we didn't have to go and revisit that once we got the target. So we did get six articles agreed to and a number of other provisions. And so when the global agreement came out, the target for 22-23, basically 85% of the target was set by leadership and all things that we expected in the end would be there. And that would be the full conformity on the Paycheck Protection Program and a 10,200 subtraction for UI. So 85% of that, you know, $644 million out of the $754 million target in 22-23 was really those two items. And so what we negotiated with Senator Nelson basically was the remaining $110 million. And I will say that almost everything in this bill, but a few items, and we will cover that today, were covered in the House Omnibus tax bill. We've heard these bills. We've talked about these bills. We've known about this. So a lot that is most of what we're covering today went through this tax committee, as you will see. And so just a few general comments on the bill. Overall, this bill, House File 9, does provide immediate assistance to working families and those who lost their jobs and economic support for businesses that were hurt by COVID-19. As I mentioned, 85% of the bill deals with COVID-19 relief and recovery. And that's full conformity to the Paycheck Protection Program and a subtraction on the unemployment insurance up to $10,200. That's a huge benefit and will provide immediate relief and assistance and tax cuts to a lot of folks. The remaining part of the bill, what we tried to do is, with the dollars that were left, is how can we do things that really make a difference, do things that really move the dial for people and really impact people's lives. And I think we've done that in this bill. And one of the big achievements is the homeless prevention aid to counties. I mean, these are folks and kind of issues we don't talk about normally in tax committee, but people with probably no income, no home. And what this bill provides are local solutions to a huge problem that, if we can help prevent homelessness, is going to help stabilize families, address poverty, address the educational opportunity achievement gap, and just is really a big benefit to folks in our state. Another area is the expansion of working family credit to 19 and 20-year-olds, which is we're not adding to the program, we're actually expanding new people who qualify, I think, also big. Other areas that are in the bill that also was in our omnibus tax bill is the CI property tax, statewide tax cut, by expanding the exclusion from $100,000 value to $150,000 value, which is going to help a lot of small businesses. We have a one-year extension on the historic rehabilitation credit, $5 million for the angel investment credit. And there's three main items that had a cost that were in the Senate tax bill that were not in our bill, but all things that I know we support. And one is the LGA supplemental aid, a little over $5 million that will hold cities harmless that would have lost under the formula. They will be kept harmless. That was not in our bill, but we took that from the Senate. The housing tax credit, which we have heard in this bill, heard in this committee before, supported by a lot of members, that also was accepted from the Senate. And also the veterans disability income exclusion for the property tax refund program. And the renter's credit will provide valuable property tax cuts for our veterans. So those are kind of some of the new areas that are in the bill. So overall, members, this is a bill that we, like the largest percent was produced right here in this committee. And I think we can be proud of this bill. It's a strong bill and addresses a lot of the needs that we kind of set out at the beginning of the year to look at. And so with that, I also want to note Representative Moran and Representative Detmer are now present. And before we go on, Chair Joachim, is there anything you would care to add at this point before we turn it over to staff here to go over the bill? Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I just want to thank everybody for all their work on this bill and for the staff's turnaround. It was absolutely incredible. And the conference committee folks. I mainly dealt with the tax increment financing provisions, and you'll hear that we did pretty well on extending the five-year rule to eight-year. We were able to do some affordable housing trust fund, kind of a pilot project with Richfield, St. Louis Park, and Minnetonka. We unfortunately were not able to, there was only one TIF provision that we lost, and that was for Fridley. And then we didn't accept the Ramsey TIF provision that we didn't hear either in the House. And we were able to get all of our loss provisions as they left the House included in the bill, plus a way to some statutory language to tighten up what we consider local option sales tax projects to include buildings and improvements to parks and then trail connections. And we also, we were not able to get the Plymouth lodging tax, but we were able to get the Sartell lodging tax for Representative O'Driscoll. We got the homestead changes for family members and veterans homestead to December 31st. There's some other provisions too that you'll hear about from staff. Probably the biggest change is while we got our 4D report in that Representative Herr carried, we also accepted some of the House language originally in our House Bill 2. We blinked off the indexing for 2 years on that first tier. We did that again, but we also moved that first tier down to 100,000 again for the first 2 years when we blinked off the indexing. So that's probably the biggest changes in that property tax area, but I kick it back to Chair Marquardt.
So thank you very much. And I will say there is, you know, one area that we're working on right now. It kind of came late into the game. But it's, you know, being looked at and worked on, and that's kind of this Enbridge valuation situation. So that's not in this bill, but is being looked at and worked on by folks. So Representative Robbins, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I just wondered, as staff is going through the bill, if you or they could point out any provisions that weren't either in the House or Senate bill originally, that we could just be aware of what those are, if there are any. Thank you.
Very good. I don't know if there is anything that wasn't in either bill, but if there is, staff, please note that. Representative Garofalo.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. First of all, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, first of all, I want to let you know that I like your bill. I like your bill. You know, there's this technology that exists on Zoom where you can superimpose someone else's face and voice over someone else's. And as I was going through the bill and hearing you talk, I thought that maybe for a second, Representative Davids had hijacked your account and written a super secret omnibus tax bill. There's some really good provisions I want to highlight. I know that on the fiscal spreadsheets, it only shows about $40 million in the tails, but I want to thank you for maintaining the exclusion in the statewide property tax levy for that first $150,000, going from 100 to 150. I understand there's some geographic disparities with that, but that's a really good provision. And just thank you for doing that. I did have a couple of quick questions. I know our time is limited, so I'll try to be brief in my praise for the bill, but I do want to thank you and the staff for your work on this. First of all, the automatic payback of the June accelerated sales tax, when I read that language, the impression I got is that if the surplus is big enough and the other criteria are met, like that could conceivably be taken care of for the June accelerated sales tax this fall. Is that correct?
Representative Garofalo, that is correct, yes. And to Representative Robbins, I have to mention there was one thing that was added by actually Senator Gazelka, which is the June accelerated for construction projects. And I didn't mention that just for the reason Representative Garofalo mentioned, is because, if we've got a big enough surplus, it could take care of that June accelerated, which would take care of that construction portion that's in there also. So, yes.
Representative
Garofalo.
Thank you. Chair Joaquim, for the TIF provisions that are in the bill. And Chair Joaquim, thank you for your work on this as well. It's appreciated. I know historically there's been some conflict around when we're waiving the definitions for blight. In your opinion, are any of these TIF provisions, do they rise to that level of controversy, or there's local opposition or opposition from local property tax property owners?
Chair Joaquim?
Not that we have. Chair Marquardt, thank you, Representative Garofalo, for the question. Not that we heard of in testimony at all.
Okay. Representative Garofalo.
Good, good. And then, and Representative or Chair Marquardt, I believe this is you. The angel investor tax credit, my understanding was that was supposed to be in the tails, but the spreadsheet just shows it for 1 year. Is that which is it supposed to be?
Yeah, Representative Garofalo, it's correct in the fiscal sheet there. So it's just for 1 year.
Okay. Yeah, so it's just the
1 year.
Okay, so just the 1 year. Good, good.
Yes.
And then my last question, I'm sorry, I'm just reviewing my notes here. For House File 618 that was included in the bill, this is the Burnsville provision for TIF, and Representative Chairman Joachim, for that, do you recall what the conversations were regarding the infrastructure they were allowed to use for that site? I don't recall that from our previous discussions of this bill, and it when I saw it last night, it kind of raised I'm familiar with the area. Do you recall what the conversations were around what that might be in terms of a tunnel or a bridge?
Chair Joachim.
Chair Marquardt, Representative Garofalo, I'd have to look at my notes. They really tightened it up from the year before what the request was. And I think they're allowed to use some infrastructure outside of the district to do the connectivity piece. But no, and like I said, they really changed their request since their 2020 proposal. But I could probably get you more information after this.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, and thank you both, to both chairs. Thank you. I appreciate that. I can also talk offline with the author again. Just it's something I don't recall from the previous conversation, so it's more than likely an error on my part. But again, Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank you for your work on this. I think the, you know, as I've mentioned in committee before, I disagree with the thought process that says we only have one omnibus tax bill. I think that there's a lot of things that we can pass in a bipartisan fashion by itself, but I also understand that that wasn't your decision. And the process that was followed may or may not have been, you know, the pathway you followed. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a couple of things I disagree with in here, but I think for the most part, you really did put together a really good bill. And I just want to thank you for your work on this and look forward to a quick passage of this on the House floor off the Senate and to the governor's desk. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Appreciate that. So let's move to staff at this time, and we'll go to House Research, and then we will kind of wait at take questions at the very end, and then we'll go to fiscal and then take questions. So, Mr. Williams, I think you've got you will start us out with Article 1.
Chair Marquardt and members, Article 1 is the Federal Conformity Individual Income and Corporate Franchise Tax Article. I'm going to be working off the House Research Bill Summary.
And Mr. Williams, if I might, I've asked staff to just basically go over mainly changes or things that are different, and then just not go into great details on things that we had in our tax omnibus bill. So if that's all right with members, that's kind of the direction they have. So, Mr. Williams.
Chair Marquardt and members, I'm going to be working off the House Research Bill Summary, which should be was sent out to members through email, I think, today. I mean, starting at the top, I'm not going to be going section by section, as Chair Marquardt mentioned, but I am going to go through sort of the bullet point list that's at the top of the article summary. So the first sort of significant change in this article is a partial federal conformity. So typically we've conformed in the past in the House bill as it left the House, conformed by updating the dates in statute that reference the Internal Revenue Code. This bill is taking sort of a different approach in that it's not updating the dates. It's instead adopting selected provisions, 19 specific provisions that have been enacted federally since we last updated our dates. And if you look at the bill summary, there's a table on page 4 that describes what those provisions are. Without going into too much detail, there's depreciation provisions. There's provisions related to disaster relief. Some COVID-related provisions. So there's emergency financial aid credits for students, exclusion from gross income and deductibility of associated expenses for EIDL loans and some small business loans. There's rules for coronavirus-related distributions from retirement accounts that I know members have gotten questions about. And then there's also the provisions that have been discussed quite frequently in the last year related to unemployment insurance and the Paycheck Protection Program. The article also extends the angel investment credit, as we mentioned before. It's extended at $5 million rather than $10 million in the House bill for 2022 only. There are some technical changes, but nothing substantive in the language that has changed. And then the historic structure credit is also extended for 1 year, which is a change from the House bill. The bill includes two provisions establishing state tax credits. There's the House provision establishing a credit for film production. There have been some changes. The amount of the credit was reduced to $4.95 million per year. It's effective for tax years 2021 to 2024. There's rules related to assignment, so there's no longer partial assignment allowed in the new language. There's the sunset that I mentioned. The economic impact report has been moved to the Department of Revenue instead of DEED. There's a $50,000 appropriation to DEED to administer the credit, and then there's also some technical and administrative changes throughout the bill. The article also establishes a housing tax credit contribution fund. This was a Senate provision that I'm going to describe briefly along with some of the brief changes. It would allow taxpayers to contribute to a fund administered by the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority. And in exchange for their contribution to the fund, they would receive an 85% tax credit. That's down from the credit that was allowed in the original Senate language. The taxpayer may indicate that the credit is sort of designated for a specific housing project. And then the taxpayer could not allow claim other state tax credits or deductions for the contribution. And then the fund at MHFA would be used to make grants and loans for multifamily and single-family affordable housing projects. That housing credit is effective for tax years 2023 to 2028. As the bill summary mentions, and as Chair Marquardt has mentioned already, the bill would reduce the working family credit eligibility age to 19 for childless claimants. So that would apply under current law. Childless claimants could claim the credit at age 21, and so this would reduce that age limitation. The bill includes the changes to the student loan credit to reduce the marriage penalty, but one change from the House bill is that the refundability provision has been removed. The bill establishes a subtraction for payments from charities to volunteer drivers. This is a Senate provision that was not in the House bill. I think Representative Lislegaard carried a similar provision in the previous biennium. There's one minor change that's not even noted in the summary here related to casualty losses. The House provision sort of adopted a more expansive change to the state itemized deduction for casualty losses. And the Commerce Committee report is language that sort of just clarifies the existing language for the deduction to match the way that it's being administered currently by the Department of Revenue. Article 2 of the bill is the partnership audits article. And I think we've heard this in committee before. There's no changes since we heard it in committee last. Article 3 is the pass-through entity tax. This is the state and local tax or SALT deduction cap workaround that would allow entities to file pay their state income taxes at the entity level. There are some changes in this article since it left the House. There's an adjustment to the residency percentage for non-resident filers that use this election. The late payment and filing deadlines are moved to be treated more like the corporate income tax. There's a limitation on which trusts can elect the pass-through entity election. And there's also language indicating that the election is only available when the federal SALT cap is in effect. And Chair Marquardt, that concludes Article 4. And I believe my colleague Ms. Hagler will take over. That concludes Article 3. My colleague Ms. Hagler will take over for Article 4.
Very good. Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 4, the sales tax article, has been discussed a little bit already. Sections 1, 2, and 3 refer to that June accelerated provisions, and there was a bit of discussion already from Chair Marquardt and Representative Garofalo. But Section 1 is the same as it was during regular session, reducing the percentage of June accelerated liabilities for certain vendors if there's a budget surplus. Section 2 makes some conforming changes, as well as adds that exemption from the June accelerated requirement for certain construction retailers. And that exemption part is new, but it did come from House Bill 427 that we heard in committee. Sections 3 and 4 are also the same as they were in the original House bill. So that concludes Article 4. Article 5 is the vapor and tobacco taxes article. All of the sections here remain unchanged except for Section 2, which amends the definition of nicotine solutions products. There will be a technical fix to this provision in the author's amendment that Chair Marquardt mentioned at the beginning of the hearing today, and it will just correct a drafting error that will reinstate some stricken language. And the section, all of these sections are clarifying or conformity related, and there is no revenue impact, and there's no broadening of the vapor tobacco taxes base here. And so that concludes Article 5. And then Mr. Swanson will take over for Article 6.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson.
Article 6. Mr. Chair and members, moving on to Article 6, which is the property taxes article. You can find this starting on page 21 of the summary. Section 1 of this article, along with Sections 11 and 13, relate to the Fire Protection Special Taxing District provision. The primary change here is that rather than creating a new type of special taxing district, this language just expands the current law emergency medical services special taxing district to include fire protection services. The other change in this section is that political subdivisions and newly established districts will be required to submit levy and expenditure reports to the legislature. Sections 2 through 6 of this article are all provisions that were in the House version of the tax bill and include the exemption for the parcels owned by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe in Cass County, the qualifying relatives change for ag relative homestead, the application deadline change for homestead, and the SFI split classification clarification. Section 7 is the 4D property tax classification provision that Chair Joaquim mentioned. So what this provision would do is set the first tier limit for 4D property at $100,000 for assessment years 2022 and 2023. Then after that time, the tier limit would begin to be readjusted annually as it currently is. Section 8 moves back the application deadline for the disabled veterans homestead market value exclusion to December 31st. Sections 9 and 10 of Article 6 are the state general levy provisions. And the only change here from the original language in the tax bill is that the effective date has been moved back to beginning with taxes payable in 2023. Section 12 is the supplemental statement that's added to the notice of proposed property taxes. This was in the original House tax bill, but there was a reference to the Minnesota Property Taxpayers Day within this section. Because that provision has been removed from the bill, that reference is no longer in this section. Section 14 is a new provision as well that came from the Senate tax bill, and this excludes veterans' disability compensation from the definition of income for the purposes of property tax refunds. Sections 15 and 16 were also in the House tax bill, and they authorize a city to impose special assessments for energy improvement projects. Section 17 is related to the Fire Protection Special Taxing District's provision in that it removes the levy limit for the Cloquet Area Fire and Ambulance Special Taxing District so that that district's levy authority matches the general authority given to other districts within this article. Section 18 is the other SFIA clarifying provision that was in the House tax bill. And finally, Section 19 is the report on the 4D property tax classification that Chair Joaquim mentioned. Moving on to Article 7, the Aids and Credits article. Section 1, also in the House tax bill, was the transferring of the portion of county program aid that is designated for public defender costs directly to the Board of Public Defense. Section 2 of this article is the local homeless prevention aid. And as Chair Marquardt mentioned, there were this is included in the bill, and there were a couple of changes. The primary change is with the distribution formula. So under this current language, there are actually two amounts that go into each county's overall distribution. The first amount is equal to the greater of $5,000 or the county's per capita share of 5% of the overall allocation. And then the second amount that goes into the distribution is the remaining allocation after the amounts under Part 1 have been determined, multiplied by the county's proportional share of the 3-year average of students experiencing homelessness. The other change is with the overall allocation. So under this language, the aid would distribute $20 million annually. It would sunset after 6 years, and the first AIDS payable year will be in 2023. Section 3 was in the Senate tax bill, and this is the supplemental LGA that Chair Marquardt mentioned. Again, this provides supplemental aid payment to cities that are losing LGA between 2021 and 2022, and that aid amount is just equal to the amount of LGA lost between those 2 years. And finally, Section 4 provides a one-time grant in the amount of $250,000 to the city of Floodwood. Originally in the House tax bill, this had been an increase in LGA of $250,000 per year for 5 years. This has changed to just a one-time grant in the amount of $250,000. And Mr. Chair, that concludes the AIDS and Credits article, Article 7, and Ms. Hagler will cover the next article.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hagler, Article 8.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 of Article 8 is new language that was not in either the House or the Senate bill. Chair Joaquin mentioned this provision already, but just briefly again, the section creates a definition of a capital project that may be approved by the legislature when authorizing a local sales tax. A capital project would be a single building or structure, park improvements, or construction of a contiguous trail. This section will provide more clarity for jurisdictions when deciding whether to seek authorization for a local sales tax and the projects that may be authorized by the legislature. The remainder of the sections authorize new local sales tax are mostly unchanged from House File 991, except the authorization for Hermantown in Section 8 of this article adds an additional project for improvements to Fichtner Park. There are also authorizations for the cities of Warren and Staples. In the original House bill, used for LGA distributions rather than local tax authorizations. However, the House then now adopted the Senate provisions for a local tax. And these were both heard in the Property Tax Division this year, and the language is unchanged from how they were heard in Division. So that concludes Article 8. Article 9, the tax increment financing article. As Chair Joaquin mentioned, there are some changes from how it was in House File 991. Section 1 was changed a bit and still allows for unencumbered increment to be transferred from a TIF district to assist in development. Language specifies that the increment can be used for loans, interest rate subsidies, or other improvements, so long as doing so will create jobs in the state. Construction must commence before the end of 2025, and transfers may only be made through the end of 2022. The public hearing and notice requirements are still intact as they were in House File 991. Section 2 has been changed to allow pooled increment to be used for owner-occupied housing, as well as the other low-income rental housing they're authorized for now. Sections 3 and 4 extend the 5-year rule by 3 years for a total of 8 years for redevelopment districts statewide that were certified in 2018, 2019, and 2020 through June 30th. And Section 4 makes a corresponding change to the 6-year rule. Section 5 is somewhat new, but it was partially in the House File 991. It authorizes the temporary use of increment for temporary transfer of increment from the TIF account to an affordable housing trust fund for the cities of St. Louis Park, Richfield, and Minnetonka. And the changes from House File 991 are that there are more limitations on what the increment can be used for once it's transferred. It can be used for grants and loans for housing projects and housing development. An increment might only be transferred through the end of 2026. The transferred increment is subject to annual reporting requirements, as a traditional TIF increment is. However, once the increment is transferred, it can be used in accordance with the allowed uses outlined in this section. And is not subject to other restrictions that TIF increment is traditionally subject to. The remainder of the TIF article is as it was in House File 991. And I can just maybe shed a little bit more light on Representative Ruffalo's question about the Burnsville TIF language. The language that's in the bill here is exactly how it was introduced this year and in 2020. And my recollection of the project is that the bridge and the tunnel reference is just refers to a piece of the project that is a walkway that will connect the mall area, which is the area authorized by the district, to an adjacent area, so people have a right of way to walk from one area to the other. And I don't recall that there was any controversy about that either. So Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 9. And Mr. Williams will take over for Article 10.
Thank you very much. Mr. Williams, Article 10.
Chair Markward and members, Article 10 is the public finance article. There have been no changes since it left the House. Article 11 is the miscellaneous article. This article contains a number of provisions that have been changed since the bill left the House. The first is the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. There haven't been any changes to the underlying language, but the appropriation has been reduced to $138,000 a year to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And my understanding is that reduces the number of full-time equivalent positions hired by one. There's new language that was carried in the House state government bill that was not in the House bill, but it essentially requires contractors hired by the Department of Revenue that handle FTI or federal tax information to undergo background checks. So that was carried in the House state government bill, and there's been no changes to the underlying language, but that was carried in the Senate tax bill, and it's now included in the agreement. There's language related to the budget reserve setting the amount at $2.377 billion. I think that was in the leadership agreement. And other than that, there's the revenue recapture provision. So the House provision disallowed private hospitals that lease their buildings from the city or county from participating in the revenue recapture building. The agreement instead requires those hospitals to submit a copy of their lease to the Department of Revenue annually. And my colleague, Mr. Swanson, will.
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, picking up with sections 12 and 13 of Article 11, these are just the solid waste tax provisions that were in the original House tax bill. Sections 14 through 17 are the iron ore production tax provisions that were in the House tax bill with one additional section. So sections 14, 15, and 17 are the original language, and these just expand the definition of other iron ore bearing materials so that lump ore is now subject to the production tax. Section 16 is a new provision, and I believe this was not in either tax bill, not in the Senate or the House tax bills. And this would delay until 2024 the inclusion of lump ore in the calculation of the amount of state aid paid into the production tax. So under current law, the state currently contributes 22 cents per taxable ton of iron ore concentrates in each production year. So lump ore would not be included in the overall total of iron ore concentrates for the purposes of this state payment until 2024. Section 18 is just related to the background check provision that Mr. Williams covered in Section 6. Section 19 directs St. Louis County to transfer $1.5 million from a 2006 appropriation to the city of Bewabic for certain street improvement projects. Any remaining amount of that 2006 appropriation can be retained by the county for road improvements. Finally, Article 11 ends with a couple of appropriations. Section 20 contains the appropriations to the LCC and to the Department of Revenue for the Tax Expenditure Review Commission that Mr. Williams just mentioned. And lastly, Section 21 appropriates $3 million from the general fund to the Department of Revenue for the administration of this act. Lastly, Mr. Chair, the final five articles, Article 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16, are all the Department of Revenue policy and technical provisions that were in the House tax bill. And that concludes our overview.
Thank you very much, everyone. So members, at this point, any questions on the summary or clarification on any provisions in House File 9? Representative Anderson, I presume. I see Paul A. But Representative Anderson?
That would be correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the hearing this morning. I jumped on a little bit late. I apologize for that, but didn't hear any mention of the fire remediation sales tax exemptions for the cities of Melrose and Alexandria. Certainly hoping that they are in the area that I didn't hear this morning. So what's their status?
We had the city of Melrose, city of Alexandria, and the city of Minneapolis all with aid, and those were not accepted. So they are not in the bill.
Oh, that's a surprise. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a House position, which we pushed, but we were unable to get that. Any other? If not, I'm going to go to the fiscal, Ms. Templin, Ms. Schill. If you would, kind of with the same tone as House Research, kind of cover the main points and changes and so forth. So with that, Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I will just move the spreadsheet. Here we go. I've just shared my screen. Again, my name is Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. My colleague, Kathy Schill, and I will be covering the joint legislative tracking sheet for the tax agreement and House File 9. Just a couple of housekeeping items about this spreadsheet that you see on the screen, and you should also have a PDF copy that you can access and print out. The spreadsheet has two parts. The first 10 pages of the spreadsheet show the agreement provisions only, and the remaining 14 pages of the spreadsheet are a side-by-side of the agreement relative to the House, Senate, and Governor's omnibus tax bills. My colleague and I will not be covering the last 14 pages of this spreadsheet, but these pages are available for your reference. Our goal today is just to walk through the spreadsheet to help you find the fiscal impact of tax provisions in the agreement and to highlight new or changed provisions relative to the House omnibus tax bill. Starting out on page one of these is the summary page, and you can see on the summary page, just bringing your attention to line one and two, these two lines just show the current law general fund tax revenues for each biennia in the budget window, and the current law tax current law expenditures for property tax refunds, aids, and credits. Lines three through five of the summary page show the net change to the general fund with the tax agreement in House File 9 to both tax revenues, which is labeled tax policy, and property tax aids and credits. Line five shows the net total estimated change to the general fund with the changes contained in House File 9. So in the fiscal 22-23 biennium, the total estimated general fund revenue reduction is $751.4 million. And in fiscal 24 and 25, the estimated revenue reduction change is $192.9 million. Lines 6 through 16 on this summary page show the fiscal impact to non-general fund accounts, and I won't go over those, but the information is there for your for you to look at, and additional detail on non-general fund accounts is available within the spreadsheet. So moving on, the pages 2 through 5 of the spreadsheet cover tax policy or tax revenue provisions. Federal conformity provisions are covered on pages 2 and 3. One provision in the agreement that has been discussed is the federal conformity provision to the PPP loan exclusion. In the House omnibus tax bill, the PPP loan exclusion was capped at $350,000 of income. In the agreement, it is 100% exclusion from gross income allowed for PPP loans. Lines 1 through 12 show the fiscal impact of this provision. And you can see in fiscal 22 and 23, there's an estimated general fund reduction of $409.1 million and $45.7 million in fiscal 24 and 25. The other federal conformity provisions with a smaller fiscal impact can be found on lines 13 through 77. I won't go through these provisions line by line. The information is there if you need it, but these federal conformity provisions pertain to individual income tax extenders, business tax extenders, and conformity to charitable contribution rules and disaster relief provisions. One thing I'll just point out about the agreement is that in the House tax omnibus bill, many of these conformity provisions were conformed to in tax year 18, 19, and 20, and they were also effective for prospective tax years that were allowed in the federal act. In the agreement in general, these provisions are conformed to mainly to retroactive tax years, to tax years 18, 19, and 20. In most cases, the agreement conformity to prospective years is not conformed to. So that is a really high level overview of the fiscal impact of some of the federal conformity provisions. So moving along to page 4. Starting on line 76, we have additional tax policy changes. And the fiscal impact of individual income tax provisions are covered on line 77 through line 90. Provisions that were contained in the House Omnibus Tax Bill that have changed in the agreement or are new. Let me start out by saying line 78 is not new and it's not changed, but I will highlight this provision. This is the federal conformity to the unemployment insurance benefit exclusion up to $10,200. The fiscal impact of that provision is shown on line 78. And then on line, other provisions that are new or changed, the film production tax credit, that is a capped allocation that is effective for tax year 21 through 24. And the allocation is just under $5 million a year at $4.950 million. And I believe in the House bill, that amount, that credit was at $10 million a year. So in the agreement, the allocation has been reduced. On line 84 of this spreadsheet, I want to point out the student loan credit that is that was in the House bill. In the agreement, the student loan credit, the modifications, the changes just pertain to correcting a marriage penalty, and the fiscal impact of that provision is on line 84. Line 85, we've talked about. Is the housing tax credit. This is a provision that the Senate, that came from the Senate, and the allocation for this credit shows up in the tails, and it is an allocation, a capped allocation from tax year 23 to 28, and it is at $9.9 million a year starting in fiscal 24. You can see the fiscal impact. And then just jumping or moving forward in this spreadsheet, the individual income tax estimated revenue reduction is $490.7 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $63.2 million in fiscal 24 and 25. Moving to corporate tax provisions are on lines 93 through 97. One provision that is that has been changed since it left the House omnibus bill is on line 95, and this is the historic rehabilitation credit. It was mentioned that this is a one-year extension, and there is no cap on this one-year extension, and the fiscal impact is about $12.6 million in fiscal 22 and 23, and a revenue reduction of $14 million in 24 and 25. And you can see the total estimated revenue reduction for all the corporate tax law changes on line 97 of the spreadsheet, the changes to the general fund. Okay, and now moving to sales tax on lines 98 through 101. One provision, and the chair mentioned this, on line 100 of the spreadsheet, this shows the fiscal impact of the exemption to certain construction material vendors for the being exempted from the June accelerated payment. This was not in the House omnibus tax bill or the Senate omnibus tax bill, but it was heard in tax committee as House File 427, as Ms. Hagler mentioned. This has a revenue reduction of $12.6 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $1 million in the tails. And then my colleague, Ms. Schill, would like to cover the estate tax and state general levy provisions on lines 102 through 109.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Kathy Schill, House Fiscal Staff. The estate tax line 103 is as it was as the bill left the House. This is an unknown revenue loss interaction with the relative agricultural homestead determination. Wanted to point out here that it's in the estate tax because additional property would be eligible for the farm subtraction. So this is an unknown impact. Moving down to the state general levy, you'll see on line 107, the increase in the market value exclusion from 100,000 to 150,000 and the accompanying reduction in levy to prevent shifting. This is still costs $20.1 million per year, but effective 1 year later than in the House bill, now in paid 2023. The first fiscal year impact in fiscal 23 reflects just 6 months of an impact. And I might point out also, there are income tax interactions earlier in the sheet from lower property taxes. This has triggered reductions in income tax returns in the tails. It's a revenue gain of about $600,000 per year. And returning back to Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we wrap up the summary of the tax policy section of the spreadsheet, I just want to also add, there was discussion earlier about June acceleration, and in the agreement, June acceleration and the budget reserve, it is added as a priority to eliminate the June accelerated payment requirement as a priority to the budget reserve. In the House tax bill, that elimination covered sales tax and excise taxes, and I just want to point out that in the agreement, the elimination just pertains to sales taxes only and not to excise taxes. And again, that provision has no impact on the spreadsheet because it is dependent or contingent on the November forecast. So with that said, the total estimated general fund revenue reduction for tax revenues to the general fund for the changes in House File 9, is $737.360 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $139.910 million in fiscal 24 and 25. Now I will turn to my colleague, Ms. Schill, to cover the rest of the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair, I was attempting to share my spreadsheet, but I'm having difficulty doing that. Ms. Templin will keep her spreadsheet up. Continuing on covering the highlights of new or modified items, pages 6 and 7 show changes in tax refunds, aids, and credits. Remember that on these two pages, positive numbers are program expenditures, negative numbers are cost savings. The first item is reflected on lines 1 and 11. This is the exclusion of veterans' disability benefits from household income in the calculation of PTR. This is newly added but familiar. It was part of both the governor's and the Senate's tax proposals. These changes are applied to both homeowner and renter property tax refund programs. For renter homeowners, effective refunds on property taxes in pay 2022 or shown in fiscal 23 cost $3.5 million in the first biennium and then $7.2 million in fiscal 24 and 25. And you should know approximately 24,000 veteran homeowners would receive an average property tax refund increase of $145. Moving to line 11 for veteran renters, effective for refunds on rent paid in 2021, and this impact shows in fiscal 23, the cost $1.2 million in the first biennium, and this just under $2.5 million in the tails. And approximately 10,000 veteran renters would receive an average refund increase of $120. Lines 2 and 3 through 5 are the same as what was in the House bill. I'll move to line 6, which is the modification to Class D property for low-income rental housing. If you recall, this, we had a temporary increase in the House bill for the 4D first-time tier limit, currently at $140,000 and indexed annually. The Senate bill included a class rate change to 0.25%. House File 9 has no rate change. Instead, it would reduce the first tier limit to $100,000 for assessment years 2023 and then annually adjust their tier limit beginning in assessment 2024. Now, the lowering of this threshold is expected to shift about 18% of the property value currently in Tier 1 to Tier 2, from 0.75% to 0.25%. The shift in property taxes away from 4D property impacts other properties and results in a $1.2 million impact to the homestead credit state refund in the tails. House File 9 also includes 4D affordable housing programs that report that left the House. The cost is being absorbed in by the Department of Revenue, and it's not listed here. It's actually shown on line 4 in the no-cost section of the tracking sheet. Moving down to lines 7 and 18, we've got, as mentioned by Chair Marquardt, the homeless youth prevention aid to counties. This is modified as it left the House beginning 1 year later in pay 2023. So you see the first year of the fiscal impact in fiscal 24. And this appropriation is $20 million. And as Mr. Swanson said, extending over a 6 year time period and with a modified formula. The tiered formula, that first tier addition, will shift some of the aid to counties that would have received no aid under the House formula and also shift some of the additional aid counties that had a small number of students experiencing homelessness. This also interacts with property tax refunds of $510,000 in savings per year in the tails, and then once again, income taxes earlier in the spreadsheet, there's a revenue gain of approximately $210,000 per year in the tails. Lines 8 and 25, once again, are the same as, this is the relative agricultural homestead determination, same as what we had in the House bill. And as Mr. Swanson mentioned, also lines 9 and 12 for the Sustainable Forest Act change, it is the same. Moving down the spreadsheet then to line 19, this comes from the Senate bill. This is the one-time LGA supplemental aid for pay 2022 that shows in fiscal 23 at $5.05 million. This will provide a supplemental aid to about 95 cities that are certified to receive less LGA in Pay 22 than in 21. This is a whole harmless provision, and it's meant to bridge to a new LGA formula, basically to allow time for examining and updating factors of the current formula. It is one time, you should know, and would not be added to the formula base for future LGA appropriations. Line 20 is the appropriation for floodwood, showing in fiscal 2022 of $250,000. And then moving to line 6, this is a slight change to the iron ore bearing materials definition update. And this impacts state taconite aid, as Mr. Swanson stated. New language delays until 2024 the inclusion of any additional production tax revenues from this change in the calculation of the aid. And that delay shows up in fiscal 24. The $110,000 impact is just the first payment that starts us off, and then the actual $220,000 per year shows up in fiscal 25.
Mitch, Jill, we're going to try to end at about 10-2 because we didn't get to the our meeting today on the House floor, so I want to leave some time. So I don't know how much is left, but if
I have just a couple more items, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Moving to the other aids and one-time appropriations section on page 7, you'll see the administrative items on lines 36, 40, 41, and 42 that were previously covered by both Mr. Williams and by Mr. Swanson. And then finally, we'll move to page 8. This is a list of non-general fund items that were previously covered in other areas of the spreadsheet. None of this is new. And then pages 9 and 10 are a variety of no-cost items. And Mr. Chair, unless there are questions, this concludes the presentation of the spreadsheet.
Michelle, Ms. Templin, thank you so much. Thank you. Mr. Williams, Ms. Hagler, Mr. Swanson, for your presentation. So we don't have any public testifiers that I'm aware of. They all put that in letter form and so forth. So members, questions or comments at this time?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you can hear me. This is Representative Lestigard.
Representative Lestigard, we can hear you now. I couldn't hear you right away, so go ahead.
Well, I just, I have to agree with my colleague, Representative Garofalo. This is an incredible bill. This is my second stint on this committee underneath your leadership, and it has truly been incredible what you've been able to accomplish, bringing people together, being pragmatic, willing to compromise, and produce a product that benefits all Minnesotans. So thank you so much, and thank you to everybody on the committee. I look forward to a quick session on this bill, like Representative Garofalo said. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lestigard. Other thoughts, questions on the bill? I mean, there's no doubt this is a bipartisan bill that supported strongly many areas by both sides of the aisle. Other comments? If not, Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, would like to thank you and all the staff for all their work to put this bill together. I think there's some very, very good provisions. Of course, there's a few items that some of us wish were in there, but that's the way tax bills go as far as for the last 30 years that I recall. So, again, thank you. Thank you to you and the staff for your work on this. There's some amazingly strong provisions in this bill, and I thank you for your work on putting this together.
Thank you very much, Chair Davids. And so, members, again, just, you know, so much of what is in this bill is a product of the Taxes Committee and the Property Tax Division and the priorities of all members. They're in there, and so I really want to thank everyone for that. The next stop, of course, is the Ways and Means Committee. There has not been a day set for that hearing, but that will be the next stop for this bill. So, members, with that, again, thank you so much. Staff, thank you so much for your wonderful work. And with that, have a good rest of the day. We are adjourned.